Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody. My name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey there, Thunder Buddies and Travelers Down Thunder Road. It's us, Days of Thunder, the WCW Thunder Rewatch podcast that you didn't ask for, but we did anyway, coming as part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network and powered by LargeManAppears.com. I'm your host, your slowly melting puddle of sweat, Dave Ryan, and I am joined by the slowly baking co-host that is Stagger Lee Malone. Lee, how are you?
I was hoping we'd go through the whole show and not talk about the weather, because we always talk about the weather in the summer.
It's fucking oppressively hot.
It's such a fucking Irish thing to go, boiling. And then when it's just winter, it's, freezing.
I don't want the stats, right? And I know there are a number of people who listen to this show. I'm looking at you, Webcon. I'm looking at you, Kim Geist, who would quite happily get us the breakdown of how many episodes did the banter section include weather talk. I'll bet it's an alarmingly high percentage.
It's got to be up around the 80s.
But you know what? To hit on our other trope, now that I am a father, the degree to which I will be talking about the weather in my daily life is set to increase tenfold, I think, every year.
What I need to know is, have you invested in a paddy cap yet?
No, I haven't. No. I have kind of, like, in the heat, gone back to, like, the baseball cap every now and then. Mm-hmm. And as you know, and has been recorded on the show, in the cold months, I am a beanie enthusiast as well. Mm-hmm. But I would have evaporated if I wore any of my beanies this week here. We won't dwell on that too long. But I will dwell on the two experiences I've had. I like, because again, since the whole fatherhood thing, I've not been out and about much. We did the stag a few weeks ago.
You did?
Went to Rotterdam, got to see Feyenoord play PSV. for those of you who are football fans. That was great. But by and large, I haven't done the whole kind of like socializing thing too much because obviously I want to do my bit here at home, and me fucking swanning off on my only 2 days off when I could just be like taking him, you know, all the evening and all night mm-hmm. to let Emma actually have a fucking night's sleep, because the poor woman has to put in a shift when I'm on a work night. So yeah, the things have been few and far between, but there are a couple of occasions now over the summer where there's stuff I either had pre-arranged or has kind of fallen in my lap and I can't say no to. So like, for example, right before I get married in a couple of months, I have like 2 gigs 2 days in a row a week before the wedding.
Oh.
And because Oasis decided to reform, obviously, and they're playing this summer. So I'm going to Croker to see them. And then literally the following night, on the opposite end of the kind of like scale and spectacle end of things, I'm going to see a band called Mannequin Pussy in Whelan's in Dublin. Yeah,
I'm laughing because I didn't realize Whelan's was still a thing.
Yeah, it certainly is. I don't think I've stepped foot in there in about 15 years. So I was trying to think, like, so one of the, I need to look up the dates of both gigs, because it was either Stephen Lynch, which is a real throwback for people who enjoy kind of like early internet viral comedians, or Brendan Benson. One Quarter of the Raconteurs did a solo show there once. I can't remember which was the one I saw most recently, but I know I had maybe just started college when one of those happened, which is like a little more, it's a little more than 15 years, but a little less than 20 years ago. Yeah, I'll be, oh God, I started college 18 years ago. Yeah, Jesus, fuck. Anyway, this is all a very roundabout way of saying that it kind of the same kind of happenstance happened this weekend where I had tickets booked to a thing. So I enjoy a band from Ireland called the Merry Wallopers, mm-hmm. who are kind of like, they do kind of like traditional Irish folk music, but they do it with kind of like a fairly punk rock level of rhythm and intensity. So it's class, because like it's one of those kind of honoring a lot of traditional historical like songs. There's a huge history in Ireland, as I'm not lecturing to Lee, who comes from a very musical family, but just to like people who don't know a huge amount about the Irish music scene, is like there's a long story tradition of many generations that songs are one of the ways we it's one of our primary kind of like oral traditions.
Storytelling is a big part of Irish songs.
Storytelling is a big part of Irish culture, mm-hmm. and songs have traditionally been ways of getting, you know. Yeah, anyway, so went to see them with a good friend of the show, Keith Brony, on Friday night up in Fairview Park. That was really class. It was actually surprising because I had seen them a couple of years ago in a very small venue in Dublin, and it had the kind of audience I would have expected, where even at, I would have been 33 probably at the time, maybe 34, I would have been one of the younger people there, because that kind of like the traditional Irish folk music has an audience, and that audience usually
skews older.
Yeah, quite a bit older, you know. But they've done such a great job in kind of bringing that new youthful energy to that kind of genre of music, that this time it was a big circus tent on the north side of Dublin with thousands of people in it. And I wasn't one of the older ones, but I was more like the median age. So there was a good few people who were like younger than me in their 20s in the t-shirts, like in the merch, singing away as hard as I was, or as hard as the people older than me who probably been singing these songs in pubs for years were. So it was really cool to see that, because you kind of, there are moments when you see live music where you realize there's like a generational shift in a fan base, whereas this is kind of really broad based. Famously, I had one occasion where like Green Day were one of my bands growing up, and I've seen them like probably nearly a dozen times now over the years, because I don't like any of their new shit, but that fucking nostalgia hits like crack, let me tell you, in a Green Day gig. But there was literally, I saw them maybe 18 months apart at one stage in the late 2000s, early 2010s. And I went from being one of the youngest at the gig to one of the oldest in that 18 months. And it was fucking harrowing for me. Like, it really was.
Well, this will bring a little bit of warmth to your cold, dead heart. That earlier on, I was watching YouTube with Connor, and we were watching this great channel, Drumeo. I'm sure you're aware of it. And they do these, like, you know, the genius of whatever drummer. And we're scrolling through and looking through, and he's going, oh, yeah, that's such and such a drummer and whatever. And he goes, oh, Trey Cool, that'd be good.
Yeah.
And I was like, he knows who Trey Cool is.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. They have like a really young fan base who only hopped on them after most of our generation hopped off.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like the last great hurrah for people our age and older was American Idiot. But American Idiot was 22 years ago.
I know it was. So he was still in school.
Yeah. Yeah, I was as well. Like that was my older cousin was huge into Green Day, like had the Dookie logo hand drawn on it, or the cover art hand drawn on his bedroom door growing up. I always remember that. He's mad into Offspring and stuff like that. So there's a little bit of osmosis there, but like American Idiot was like my album where I was like, I was finally the right age for a Green Day album that was new. They it's been a precipitous decline.
This will tell you, Connor had his primary school graduation, and one of the songs performed by one of the kids was Boulevard of Broken Dreams.
Oh, really? Because, well, our generation, it was always Good Riddance Time of Your Life. Like, yes. That was the easy fucking, yeah. I've had a couple of those harrowing moments of like music that was of our time being now frighteningly old. Like there's a podcast I want to shout out that I listen to called What Is Music? A music podcast, where they do like unbelievably deep and specific dives into like an entire discography. So like an album might take them 3 90-minute shows to cover. That's how deep the chat about it is. And the gimmick is kind of like where one of them is a super music nerd. One of them likes listening to music but knows nothing about music, and then Wood is kind of in between. So it's interesting chats that come out of it, and they tend to pick bands I really like. Like their first season was the Manic Street Preachers. They've done Muse, they've done Radiohead, they've done a couple of kind of like more short discographies the last while. So they did Lauryn Hill, they did Billie Eilish, they did then they went right back to Long, because they did REM was the one they just finished.
Jesus.
Which is one of my favorite bands as well. And now they've just started Arctic Monkeys. And this was the shocking realization that the first Arctic Monkeys album turned 20 years old this year.
Yeah, again, that's a band I would associate with just around where I finished school.
Because I was doing my junior cert when that album came out.
Yeah,
which is kind of like your intermediate school exams at a high school level here.
And that would make sense, because I was a couple of years ahead, yeah. So.
Yeah. If there was, for our American friends to translate again, because we're speaking heavy Irish code, if you had like a set of state-run exams at the end of junior high before high school, it's that kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. Like you do them when you're about 15, 16, and then you do like your final 2 years are called like your leaving cycle, and then you see your leaving cert. It's not quite a map, like, because I know there's more high school. Like, is it high school 4 years? I think
high school is 4 years. Yeah. Freshman, junior, fucking sophomore and senior, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Some order. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's besides the point. We're old. The second thing, I've got to bring back, maybe for the first time since paternity leave.
Oh, absolutely is, yeah.
Bit of snack talk to the pod, because the second event I went to, also with Keith Broney. Keith Broney is a great man if you happen to befriend him ever, because there is not one event where he will say no to going, whether he's into it or not. Like it's his rep amongst me and several other of his friends are just like, when you're in a pinch for somebody to go to a thing, Brony will do it.
Actually, do you know what? He probably is the equivalent of an Irish politician, where he will go to the opening of anything.
Yeah. You go to the opening of an envelope, as well, my grandfather would say. Yeah, absolutely. But like, in fairness, that's how he ended up at Mary Wallopers. But this was his kind of like, he spotted this thing today, and it was kind of like his birthday gift to me was to bring me to this, which was great. And that is, for anybody who was into, like, a lot of people got into food YouTube during lockdown. The Bon Appetit Test Kitchen, channels like that. One of the channels that is still quite popular now is First We Feast, which is most well known for the Hot Ones brand coming out of there. It's a channel owned by Complex Magazine, or was owned by Complex. I know it's up for sale. I can't remember if it actually got bought or not. But one of the things I really loved on there that wasn't just Hot Ones was a show called The Burger Scholar Sessions, where a guy, the hamburger historian, George Motes would teach you every week or so how to make three different regional varieties of hamburger. He has also made a documentary where he travels the country looking at regional hamburgers that is up in full on YouTube, by the way, if you're ever looking for something to watch. He's also written several books on the topic. I have one, Hamburger America. But he manages or has a stake in a couple of burger places in Dublin, and he's doing a European tour this summer where he'll rock up at a burger place or at a food place, and he will basically put in a shift on the griddle, and you, for, you know, like 15-20 quid, can go into this like little burger party and get a George Motes hamburger made for you. And that's what myself and Keith Brownie did today. And it was fabulous. It was, for anybody that knows the regional speciality, it was an Oklahoma fried onion burger.
Sounds
where
nice.
Essentially like half the patty is on the griddle by itself. And then there's like a small mountain of finely sliced onions. And then like halfway through the cook, the two are kind of like smashed together, put on the griddle. And then he just throws them on like fresh potato bun with sliced American cheese, no sauce required. As his t-shirts that were on sale at the event say, grease is a condiment. So he puts no sauce in that, and he doesn't even put, and this is what I thought was an interesting thing. He doesn't put the pickles on the burger. He puts them on the side so that you can opt into a pickle rather than have to opt out of a pickle, which I'm not a pickle and a burger guy. So I did appreciate that. Now, I did, for the full Motes experience, if he's putting it on the side of the plate, he wants me to try it. So I did lop one of them in and try it. I wasn't won over by the pickle, but holy hell, this was the best burger I've had in my life.
I can imagine it was, because, you know, how often are you going to get fed a burger by this guy? So yeah,
the man himself. And like, I'll tell you, this is what I was saying to you off the air, is that this man has the, if you've never seen him, this man looks like a pro wrestling manager.
Oh yeah.
Big thick glasses. He's got whopper sideburns, a shock of gray hair. He's quite tall, you know, and he has an unbelievable set of chompers. Like, it's not the full Roman Reigns turkey teeth, but it's the, this man has very much looked after his teeth and maybe had some minor work done. Like, it's not the, he smiles and you need to put on sunglasses level of bright. But the only thing that I think, like, in terms of like dental work, is like his teeth are way too symmetrical to have been grown naturally out of his head. Do you know that kind of thing? Like, they are either he won the genetic lottery or he had a little bit of the kind of like evening things up. I didn't realize this until after we were speaking to him and I was looking at the photo to put it up on Instagram. I was like, oh my God, look at those teeth.
And look, hey, that man is now a celebrity, so he's well entitled to alter his appearance if that's what makes him feel good.
Yeah, I've resolved in the last maybe 6 months or so that I think the next time I go to America, I'm going to do New York. I never really had this might sound weird to some people, but it was never one of the cities I had on my list for traveling to North America. Because it felt like the one everybody, because it's the easiest city to get to from Ireland in the US. And it felt like the one everyone does. So I'm not trying to be a hipster, but where
we all have a relative.
Yeah. So like when I've gone the two times, I did Dallas. Now, that was for Mania that time. It wasn't because I just picked Dallas. Although like the historical significance of Dallas and just the idea of like, if you want to get the full American experience, you go to Texas in some ways. That was good. And I've done San Francisco. but like the kind of cities I've always had on my list are like New Orleans. I'd love to do New Orleans, and Emma's always wanted to do LA, but I have no
interest in LA.
No, I think she's been talked out of it because we've talked to a few people who have done like the California sweep, and they're just like, as a tourist place, like unless you're like super into the celebrity culture thing, LA has really nice food places, but like it's not really touristy apart from like if you're well into Hollywood. And I love movies, but celebrity culture makes me fucking roll my eyes. And Emma would be similar in that way. But yeah, New York was never there. But George Motes has a restaurant there.
He does.
That he works in most, like that's kind of where he's based out of, called Hamburger America. And that has been part of the me slowly leading into, I think I will go. But please do catch him on his European tour if he's coming to a place near you, because boy, howdy, were these burgers good. I don't know if he does the same, like he's only doing one burger. Do you know what I mean? Like there wasn't a menu of options. It was just, that's the burger he's doing today. And that was absolutely fine by me, because you want the authentic experience. Although I will say, right now, myself and Brody, after housing the first one, looked at each other silently for 10 seconds and went, we're getting another one, aren't we? And we did, we got a second one. But when we went up for the second one, the lady in front of us had the fucking gall to ask for some changes to her burger. Right. Now, in the normal course of things, right, if you're out, I am totally, because again, like I said, I don't like pickles on burgers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like places that do, like, you know, lop a fried egg on a burger, stuff like that. I am totally fine with customizing menu options 99% of the time. If you are going to a cooking exhibition, and this man has said in advance of the event, I am making one burger and this is what it is. Like, there weren't even fries on the menu. It was, this is the burger. There is a bar. Like, if you want booze there as well, don't worry. Mm. But, like, I'm making one burger. And you are going to come in and tell this man, this artist, what to do. No, sorry. Fuck, get the fuck. Like, give me your tokens. I'm having a third. That's what I think.
What did she ask for?
She wanted, like... And she wanted, firstly, she wanted no onions. And I'm just like, holy shit. Like,
it's an
Oklahoma
burger.
Fried onion burger. It's like, it couldn't be more transparent what this burger is. Like, you fucking wasted your money here. And then she wanted a second patty added, which fucked up the symmetry of their grill, because they put on like one set of onions for each patty and stuff like that. So she asked for like a double burger, no onion. Now, I will say, and this is testament to the fact that, and our brief interaction with him verified this, George Motes, lovely man. Lovely man, had a great little chat with him, and he was very communicative with the woman and got her sorted with her burger. She actually customized two burgers. I can't remember what she did to the second one, because we only overheard the second one, right?
Was the second one all onion?
I don't know. I don't fucking know the madness of this woman. But like, it just goes to show, because like, if I was on that grill, and it was a fucking, like I said, a hot fucking day in Dublin, and he had been standing over the grill for, I think, 3 hours by the time we got there, and was set to stand there for another 4 to 5 hours after we left. The degree to which I would have told her to fuck off. like right beside the Liffey, like, you don't like what I'm serving, get in the fucking river.
Take a swim, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, the fucking brass neck on some people.
But, you know, that's...
Imagine going in. As like Michelangelo's painting the fucking Sistine Chapel and just going, actually, I think that should be green over there, that bit.
Yeah, no, I don't want the orange on this part.
Let the artist fill his canvas, whatever way he sees fit. You have paid for exactly what was advertised. Mm-hmm. You know? This is not like, you're not just going in and having a bit of the dinner, you know? An average place on an average day. This is specifically, he is doing an exhibition of this burger. You know,
to quote our fatherly podcast, "Stop shouting at me." I agree.
Yeah. truly. Huh. Anyway, right. I've exercised those demons. Do you want to talk about some fucking terrible wrestling?
I mean, I want to talk about some wrestling. I don't know that I agree that's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, look, a terrible era of wrestling is probably the best way to put it. Underlined very much by... We have a historically significant lead story in The Observer this week.
Okay.
Right? So before we get into our episode of Thunder, we will talk about the February 14th, the Valentine's Day edition of the Wrestling Observer newsletter. And what could say romance better, Lee, then Vince McMahon making sports and business headlines on 2-3 with the announcement of him starting his professional football league, the XFL.
Yeah, it's pretty significant.
What it adds here, and it's a detail I always forget, is that this proceeds the previous year where, instead of trying to start his own thing, he had tried to buy the CFL.
Mm-hmm.
That is something I conveniently forget.
He had also tried to buy into the NFL. Like, yeah. He had tried to buy a team a couple of times, I think.
Yeah, famously, him and Trump had both repeatedly tried to buy their own teams, and like the NFL owners just kind of fucking laughed at them. What's interesting, and it's one of those times the stock market was definitely very prescient about this, because remember, we only covered a couple of months ago the public, the public filing for WWFE. Stock prices fucking tumbled at this announcement. And this is one of those things, like, I suppose if you're a younger fan, you probably go, oh, look, with hindsight, it was such a bad idea. Like, no, at the time, a lot of people knew this was a bad idea straight away. This would be like,
I was just going to say, like right from the get-go, people were saying he doesn't have the infrastructure. Like, his idea was to have fucking Jim Ross and Bruce run his football league. Like, it was because, ah, well, they like football, so they can do it.
Even, like, first and foremost, right, in this sector, it's not like, say, in 2019, Tony Khan starts a wrestling company. And there are other wrestling companies, and WWE is clearly the market leader. They are not, within our lifetimes, ever going to catch WWE. Right? Unless, like, absolutely catastrophic and unforeseen economic circumstances collapse WWE. Right? The gap there is the gap, right? But starting a rival football league is not like trying to close that gap, because that gap is minuscule, because that gap really is only a few million fans in America, right? It's a niche. Wrestling is a niche. This is like me today going, I am going to open the market leader in cola drinks. I will immediately take down Coca-Cola. You know, this isn't Pepsi Cola. That's also, that's been around for fucking ages as well, and has a tiny, like a tiny market, a much smaller market share than Coke, but is still in there swinging and fighting. But they have the history, the brand loyalty. This is me going day one, like Dave Cola. It's out now. Definitely and, better.
And like, don't get me wrong, the NFL wasn't what it is now.
But it's the fucking NFL.
But it was still the NFL, even in 1999. It was just, there was a lot of people frustrated that it wasn't what it used to be, et cetera, et cetera. As every generation happens, you know, everything, you know, slides down eventually. But like the NFL now in 2025 is just an unfucking stoppable juggernaut, never going to be toppled. Yeah. It is the WWE of its.
But
of its,
even when it wasn't that, it's still like a fundamental American institution.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's
like, let's remember, this is what, 14, 15 years post USFL?
Yeah. Like, if you're at this stage, even, like I said, it's not the behemoth it is now, but at this stage, if you are going to go from a state of, I don't follow American football, into I follow American football, you're watching the NFL.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You're not going from nothing to the XFL. Like, and again, as like history would bear out, and I do recommend everybody watch the 30 for 30. Oh, this is so the XFL.
Good. So good.
They popped curiosity numbers early, and it fell off a fucking goddamn cliff almost instantly after that.
And what happened that everyone, all the sports people predicted, is any good ideas the XFL had, the NFL instantly took and made better.
Which I get a great degree of satisfaction for, because that's essentially what Vince did his whole career to that point, was like, what are the other territories and companies doing that I could steal and make money for myself?
I think the XFL, if I remember correctly, did kick returns differently, which the NFL adapted.
And their way of shooting football, like with the sky cam and stuff,
the sky cam immediately and taken. The cameras on field and stuff. Instantly as well. Just what everyone knew would happen, and like within, what was it, 2 seasons the XFL was dead?
No, 1 season.
It was just 1 season. But USFL was 2 seasons.
XFL, well, unless you count that like they brought it back twice, so I think it's technically like 2.5, 3 seasons.
Well, that one of them was Dwayne's XFL.
Which I saw stuff about the second Vince XFL, but I never saw a fucking jot of the Dwayne one. Okay, I'm looking here at the basically the Observer Awards happened in a kind of like a slightly different way than usual because it's end of decade.
Okay.
So he has like his rankings for like Wrestler of the Decade, et cetera, et cetera. So would you like to go through a little bit of that? Because I think it's a little bit more fun than maybe going through the scoops this week.
Yeah, that's it if you know.
Yeah, okay. So could you, if I were to tell you, guess the top five wrestlers of the decade. How many do you think you would name?
Four.
Okay. Could, do you think you could take a stab at who number one is?
Kenta Kobashi.
No.
Ooh.
Yeah. Kobashi was number two.
Steve Austin.
Nope. Not even top five.
Oh. Was it Sean?
Austin was seventh. Sean was sixth.
Okay.
Kobashi
so
second.
Misawa.
Misawa was number one.
I didn't think he'd be number one.
So you've got number one and number two there. Let me remind you for number three, who is writing this newsletter?
Yes, I know it's Brett.
No, he's fifth, but the other it's Dave. Who else is he going to vote?
Oh, Flair.
Flair, yeah.
Okay.
So you're missing number four.
So it's not Austin. See, I would have had Austin as a lock for one or two. God. Claire, Brett. It's not going to be one of the juniors. It's not going to be Ben Walk because that's just too early.
I can tell you it's not a junior.
It's Do you want any hints?
It is Kawada. Yeah.
Okay.
It is Toshiaki Kawada. And then like running down from five, then you have Sean in sixth, Steve Austin seventh, then it's Liger, Muto, Manami Toyota, and Jumbo Tsuruta.
Yeah.
Oh, and then after that, Vader, Mick Foley, The Rock, and Shinya Hashimoto bringing up the rear there.
The Rock is far too high there.
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely recency bias.
Yes.
Jesus. Okay. So, slightly different question. Most outstanding wrestler.
Oh, this is Dave's fucking weird phrasing of. Yeah. What?
Now, what I would say is this is saying most outstanding wrestler. So I think this is just the year, not the decade.
Okay. So it has to be Austin 99, right?
It's not.
Oh, no. Sorry. Yeah, most.
What I will tell you is there's only one North American wrestler in the top five.
Okay. So then 99 is Okada.
He is not in the top five either.
Okay. Who's top?
I'll give you a five down to one. In fifth, Benoit.
Okay.
Fourth, Manami Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
Third, Liger. Second, Misawa. Does that give you a hint as to who the first one might be?
Well, who's it?
Kobashi.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a pretty solid list. Like it's obviously with the injuries and stuff like that, Austin's not really.
Oh yeah, so close. 99. Yeah. Okay.
I think Flair being seventh or eighth there on the list is like
not 99. Jesus
on.
Christ.
Yeah. No. Now, unless again, this could be a thing where.
See, I can't remember which way Dave awards his awards for. Like, you know, there's one that's most outstanding, which is best wrestler. And then there's one.
See, I actually do think
Flair Tez, which is the best draw.
I do think this might be most outstanding, and he just didn't write of the decade.
Okay.
Although Austin should be a lot higher if that is true.
See, again, it's weird. Yeah, to be aware of what Dave's phrasing is.
Just because I'm looking at it, would make no sense for Flair to be on it unless it was the decade, because like the early half of the decade is really bringing things up for him there. Same with, oh yeah, you know, it is because Sean is on this list and Sean was retired by 99, so it is the decade. Sabu got in on the list there. Which rules. Koji Kanemoto in there as well. That's one for Alan Farrell when he listens to this in 6 years. Biggest box office draws.
Okay.
Do you want his... He put in his six top draws for the 80s, just as a kind of like comparison list. So I'll give you those. And then you can try give me the top one. We won't do a top five. That'd be mean. It's also, this list is fucked, by the way, because it's not the one I would guess. But anyway, the '80s, Hogan on top.
Mm-hmm.
Inoki second, Flair third. Then it's Dusty, Orndorff, and Andre.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So the '90s has to be either Austin or Hogan.
And it's neither.
So he's gone with...
Hogan is six. Now, bear in mind, these are voted for, but it's a small voting pool because I'm looking at the numbers here. So I think this is very bad journalism on my part. I haven't read exactly who was polled, but because it's quite small, I imagine it might just be like the inner circle.
Have they gone with like Muto or Chono?
Shimoto.
Tenryu
second.
Knowing what we know now about those fake New Japan numbers.
Yeah.
Like, that's bad.
What he says is he's based on main eventing shows that drew in excess of 30,000 fans. So he's not going by pay-per-view numbers. It's literally live gates, which I guess makes a little bit of sense because WWF would have been killing it on pay-per-view numbers and every other metric.
But
we'll be consistently doing basketball size arenas rather than stadiums at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
So like Hashimoto doing like fucking big buildings a few times a year probably puts them past most Americans. Okay, so this is more like it then, right? He then does another list which is based on main eventing shows that did a 1.0 buy rate or better.
Okay, so Austin, Hogan.
Austin is fourth, Hogan is first. So you got to think about it in the whole scope of the decade. Austin's only been main eventing shows for two and a half years.
Like Brett's WWF wasn't getting great buy rates, but I'm sure he's there.
Yeah, Brett is there.
Sean would have to be there then.
Sean is nowhere near the top.
Really?
Sean is about 12th.
Sting?
Or he's actually 13th. Sting is 5th.
Flair obviously is going to be
Flair
there.
Flair is 2nd. Yeah. So that's your top 5. Hogan, Flair, Brett, Austin, Sting. And then Rock is just outside that. Which is mad because, like, I guess as soon as he propelled to the main event, he never left it. Whereas Austin had, like, after he got propelled, got, like, injured two separate times. Tag team of the decade. Give me a top three there.
So Holy Demon Army.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just
taking your suggestions, then I'll tell you the top three.
Holy Demon Army. I'm trying to think of an observer reader top three of the '90s.
Will I give you a hint?
Yeah.
First and third are Japanese teams.
Mm-hmm.
Second is an American team.
Okay. So Steiners,
yeah,
and who would be the other top Japanese team? Mizawa and Kobashi.
So number one, Kawada and Taue.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Steiners, and number three, Mizawa and Kobashi.
Yeah,
Gordy and Williams right outside that. Then Mizawa and Akiyama. My favorite then is Crawford and Furnas.
Yeah. I did think they'd be a little bit lower.
I'm trying to see. Public Enemy are in there. They're about eighth or ninth on the list. That's definitely, you are very much
the lowest
team to get a vote was the Hollywood Blondes. Even Saturn and Cronus got 3 votes. And Pillman and Austin got 1 first place vote.
Well, now we know Joe Lanza had a vote in this.
Yeah. Best on interviews. Give me a top three.
Hogan, Austin, Flair.
You got 1 of 3.
Wow. Okay.
Austin is 5th. Hogan nowhere near the top.
Really? Okay.
Hogan did not get a single vote.
Okay, so Flair,
Blair is top.
Savage.
I will say, of the remaining, because you've guessed Flair and Austin is fifth. In the top five, the remaining three, two of them would be mainly associated with being outside of WWF. And one would have been all around the place, but found his greatest popularity in WWF.
God, let me try and fucking slip into 90s mind here. So more associated with WCW, or well, outside, is Funk one of them? Nope. Jesus. I don't know. Give me the top five, because I'm drawing a blank here.
First is Flair.
Yeah.
Second, I want you to visualize a sign that says Kane Dewey.
Of course.
Because yeah, it's Mick Foley.
Yeah.
Which is like a really like, I'm a little surprised, but also very well deserved.
Mm-hmm.
Third is Arn. But then you got to think, this is the other thing. It's one of those times you got to think of the readership of the mm-hmm. Observer.
Yeah.
So you got Arn and then Cornette is fourth.
Okay, yeah. See, I wasn't thinking manager, but yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Then Steve Austin, Shane Douglas, Jerry Lawler, Paulie Dangerously, Bret Hart, Sean, Jericho, Jake Roberts, The Rock, and Vince McMahon.
I'm sorry, but Jericho, dear, like, come on.
Yeah. And most charismatic isn't that interesting. Best technical wrestler, no prizes probably.
Emma?
No, well, he was second, and Brett? It was a close enough second. Liger.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it was Liger, Benoit, Malenko, Hase, and Kobashi were your top five there. Best brawler, Bruiser Brody Award.
Has to be Foley.
It's Foley.
Yeah.
This, I'll tell you what, if you make me a comp of the top five here, that's my desert island comp, because listen to this top five. And it tells me, like, sometimes I wonder what my graps is, because I mm-hmm. like all sorts of different kinds, but this is the list where I vibe with the most. The top five. Foley, Funk,
mm-hmm.
Hanson, Onita, and Sabu.
Yep.
That's a fucking three disc set mm-hmm. that I never need anything else again.
I'll take that, yeah.
And even if you want to throw in sixth place there, Vader.
Sure.
Yeah. Is there anything else worth our while? Best high flying wrestler, obviously Rey Mysterio. That's fucking, and then Liger second. Best promotion being New Japan is kind of fun.
Yeah, look, I get it.
Yeah.
New Japan in the 90s was wildly successful for what it was.
Give me your pick for best big match wrestler. Because this was a crushing victory.
I mean, it's Kobashi, right?
It's Misawa.
Okay.
Because you got what I have to remember is, like, this is the, like, the 90s is the decade of Misawa, mm-hmm. whereas like Kobashi is kind of a career that bridges the
mid-90s
and the 2000s. Yeah. Like, if this was conducted in about, like, after the 2 year title reign,
mm-hmm.
it was two years, wasn't it?
Yeah.
If you cast the poll by the end of that, like, he's well ahead of Misawa mm-hmm. at that point, probably. But the top five, like, and this is like North America in the fucking mud here, because it's Misawa, Kobashi, Kawada, Jun Akiyama, and then Shawn Michaels.
Do you know what? And I was just about to say, we hadn't had a mention of Jun Akiyama yet, which shows how fucking strong the 90s were, like, in certain aspects.
Manager of the decade. You're going to guess the top two. You mightn't guess them in order, but there's really only two.
I mean, Cornette and Heyman has to be.
Yeah. Cornette top, Heyman a distant second.
Mm-hmm.
Announcer of the decade, no surprises there. You'd probably get the top two, and you'll probably get the order as well.
JR and Heenan, is it?
JR and Joey Styles.
Oh.
It's again one of those think of the readership mm-hmm. moments. Booker of the decade. I think by all business metrics, by the end of 99, it should have been, you know, you hate to give credit to ISIS, but it should be Vince.
It should be, but it's not going to be. It's whoever was in charge of New Japan, whoever they're crediting with New Japan, is it?
Ricky Choshu.
Yeah, Choshu.
Yeah, Ricky Choshu, Paul Heyman, Vince McMahon, Giant Baba, and Jim Cornette are your top five there. Antonio Pena got a couple of votes there.
Triple H's favorite worker.
Yeah. Just gonna scan down here to the WCW news and just see if there was anything worth our while.
I have to ask Dave, should we send Dave a letter, Dave Meltzer, a letter saying that Ray should have his high flyer of the decades rescinded from him because, you know,
oh, no, they've legitimized
his career. His career was not legitimized at that point.
I came on to this show this week with a mantra that I was going to try not talk about that promo and try not talk about the fucking pipe bummer that John Cena cut last night. I have rarely been more Jacobean Magatu. Am I taking crazy pills? And when I logged on this morning and people are like, oh man, fucking Cena cooked. I'm just like, no, Cena is cooked. Sorry.
If you ever need to know that your opinion is correct, it's look at the people that are praising that promo and look at the ones that are burying it.
Yeah, yeah. But that's, look, let's, no, because this could be a 3-hour show. I've got a child to feed later. Yeah, there's not a huge amount of, there is some foreboding talk of Ready to Rumble is coming out very soon. And then the Nitro that aired just before this Thunder, Goldberg did return, but not on TV. He was just in the building and came out to say hello to everybody. After
that was nice.
Nitro went off the air. Yeah, he was just in the area. You don't see people giving out about him returning.
You know, I know. I was just about to say it. Damn you.
I say, like, that's the one last comment I'll make. It's like, man, the fans of nowadays will get some shock if they saw all the bullshit that people used to do, like to send the fans home happy after Raw.
I said this on the VOW Discord. Why all of a sudden is this an issue when for a fucking decade Steve Austin would come out after Raw ended and bullshit
himself?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did the famous footage of him going down on the wheelie chair down the ramp. Mm-hmm. Yeah, was it the Raw 10th anniversary DVD that actually had a really cool like set of extras of mad shit that happened
40
after
minutes
Raw
of him
here
and The Rock like just riffing on each other.
Yeah. Good shit, man. Good shit.
Also, no Triple H on any of that.
No. Almost like he's no fucking crack at all. Anyway, let's talk about Thunder, shall we?
Which is great crack.
Yeah. This is Thunder episode 99. I cannot believe it. We're nearly there at a full century. Coming from...
Are you saying that they didn't advertise Thunder 100 next week?
No, because it's probably out of a mortifying shame that it's still around. This was emanating from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, the 9th of February 2000, with a 2.5 rating. The rating was up by 0.2 this week. We get a flashback to Jeff Jarrett. I had written JJ and I was like, I do not remember JJ telling me on the show, but now I remember fucking Jeff Jarrett is still temporary commissioner, but thankfully not for very long. From Nitro, he forced Sid to face Hall. We had the Gormless one, Gormless Idiot David Flair taking on Terry Funk in an I Quit match. Funk murdered him, and I thought, this was naive of me, Lee, that this was going to be one of those things where they just show it because it was funny and then we move on from it. But legitimately, the main subplot of the show is how...
That Ric Flair is a bad father.
Ric Flair is a bad father, or Terry Funk should be ashamed for beating up this Gormless Idiot. I was not happy about that. Anyway.
I was just going to say, you know how they say wrestling characters are the best characters that people turned up to 11?
Yeah.
It seems like they turned Ric Flair down when they described him as a bad father.
The other thing as well is, right, like, I love Arn, and I love having him on TV, right? Mm-hmm. And I love when Arn cuts a promo. The problem I have is that maybe about 3 to 4 times in our cycle of Thunders, Arn has gotten involved in an angle, and unfortunately, as good a promo as he is, what he keeps building to is Arn Anderson wrestling one of these people, which would be significantly better. Like, Arn Anderson... Terry Funk is a way better prospect. Like, him as the avenging father figure.
Or an Arn Anderson, Terry Funk tag team, which was teased.
Yes.
Would be
incredible
in the year 2000.
Or even as they were teasing the El Dad detective agency that they were all going to be running, would have been way better. Yeah. It's kind of like that, you know. I used to get that a few years ago in AEW when like Team Taz would come out, and the only one of them worth a fucking shite on the mic when Ricky Starks wasn't around was Taz, and just Taz kept cutting promos on behalf of people, and you're basically building to, man, I want to see Taz wrestle this dude, not fucking Brian Cage.
Hey, listen, we were in there in person when he did his one bit of physical work that he'll ever do.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway. So Gene asks Terry Taylor when the Commissioner Madness will end. Says they can't change the participants in on Nitro, but they can make it a title match. I was like, what is that? What is that bylaw in WCW? It's like, oh, well, the match is made. We can't change anything, but we're allowed just randomly change stipulations.
But people in the middle of matches can change matches. Mm-hmm. It's not like this is something that's never followed through on. It's like constantly matches are changed.
Yeah. Constantly people just like don't show up for their matches or.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, Terry Taylor now being in a position of power on screen is a fucking atrocious move.
Yeah. He's like the representative of the championship committee. Like, it's clearly they've gotten to the point where JJ Dillon is like, I'm not fucking flying out for this bullshit anymore. I'm sorry. Call me when there's something important.
Just never.
When Flair's picking up the bar tab.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Do you know what's really funny, right? Is that we have this, and I was already annoyed, and then I got even more annoyed because you want to talk about something that's come up multiple times over the run of Thunder. This is still the preview package. Like, Thunder hasn't actually started yet. I got so mad because you see Jeff hit Scott Hall with the guitar to prevent him from winning. Tells the Harris brothers, you have to choose between him or me. So NWO family drama is the storyline in WCW at the moment.
And as we see, I think twice on this show, the ads that run for Super Brawl are all about the NWO 2000 taking over the company.
Man, like, this is the deadest of dead horses they're flogging.
Mm-hmm. It's just, you couldn't, like, whatever happened with Nash's injury, it's obviously they just went, well, we got a few at the NWO with each other then.
Yeah. Man. Fucking sucks. And then we go straight into the first live footage from tonight is Hall and Jarrett arriving separately.
Hall not in NWO gear. That's your giveaway.
Yeah. But now, definitely we have seen this and we have identified it in Nash that like pretty soon after the NWO 2000 thing, Nash was definitely doing his Nash best work to be like, yeah, we're associated with the NWO, but like, I'm cooler.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, him and Hall are got their own sidebar going on. Like, it's not full Wolfpack. Well, it is. We'll talk about it later. But yeah, it's not, until this point, it hadn't been full Wolfpack line of division, but they had been making it clear that there's the Outsiders and there's the NWO 2000. Mm-hmm. And look, fair enough. Our opener is the World Cruiserweight title semi-final match. It's Lash LaRue versus Shannon Moore with, obviously, his bandmates with him.
You forgot to mention, we have another brand new commentary team on Thunder.
Yes, I do get to this later in my notes because I was just like, they I've been so used to substitutions happening that I didn't note it until they actually made a point, I think, two or three times on the show. Reveal to the listeners our new full-time commentary team that definitely isn't only going to last a few weeks.
Yes, so they're, and today he says this multiple times on the show, he's like, this is your new Thunder announced team is himself and Bobby Heenan.
It's pretty good, isn't it? And actually, for once, it's been a while, Bobby Heenan looked like he was not having a horrible time.
Yes.
I'm not saying he was having a good time, saying it wasn't a horrible time he was having.
Well, this is also in the era of Bobby Heenan and Tony Schiavone absolutely fucking despising each other. So, you know.
Yeah. Man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, like, you know, we move on. Three Count coming out without fanfare, like where they didn't play their music until they were already at the ring, is kind of weird. They also did they go to dance and the music is not queuing up and the crowd is fucking all over them as well. Like, they're getting, and this is the thing I was saying, is like, I didn't appreciate at the time, but I certainly appreciate now coming back to it, is like, fuck, they got great heat. Like, it's the perfect act for the like, they did get great heat. The music starts, It did you think it felt quite awkward this week? Like, I think these botches of, like, they're not playing the music on time, they're not coming out with theme music, are intentional to make them look like fucking gits, but they did look like they were off their game here tonight. Like, something was a little bit askew.
Yeah, I didn't think it was intentional this week. It's, you know, but it's WCW, so you can never retell what's intentional and what's not. I didn't enjoy that, like, as soon as the match begins, Tanay says that at Super Brawl, it's Norman versus Tree Count in a handicap match.
Yeah.
Thus giving away the result of this one.
Yeah, because you've also got the thing that, like, I don't know. It felt like I said, I'm really enjoying Three Count for what they are at the moment. And it's just like, man, I don't know. I'm really like, I don't know. I'm just not feeling them being fed this early into, like,
but, I mean,
even just the messaging of three of them are needed to be competitive with fucking Norman Smiley.
Now, don't get me wrong, they're comedy goofs, that's what they are, but them having to be 3-on-1 against the other comedy goof isn't a great look.
But he is a comedy goof, but they're also, like, trying to sort of push him as well.
Yeah. But, yeah, look, I get it, but, yeah. I mean, look, I thought this was, like, a decent little match between Shannon and Lash.
Yeah, it was fine. Again, like, kind of week by week, I'm seeing a bit more of Lash getting his sea legs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, he's not winning awards. They're not throwing 5-star ratings at anything he's doing, nowhere close. But, like, I remember getting in the horrors about how, like, I had enjoyed him as a child. And I was like, was I really? Because, like, a lot of the wrestlers I enjoyed when I was a kid, most of them, it turns out, were actually good wrestlers. And I was like, is he one of the ones, much like my enjoyment of Kane in the late 90s, is he one of the ones I was way off on in terms of quality? Because he was not bringing it during those early weeks and months in WCW.
See, I always thought you were more of a fan of Kane's political work than his...
Would you believe it? I'm not. Would you believe it? I could not be more diametrically opposed to the man. Lies and slander. Remember when people used to say Kane was the smartest wrestler?
Yeah. Look, we've always pointed out that, yes, when you are surrounded by people that get hit in the head with steel chairs for a living, it's not that difficult to be the smartest one in the room.
Yeah.
Just because he read the Wall Street Journal once or whatever it was.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, just because he probably wore reading glasses over the mask backstage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was pretty decent. And again, like, Shannon Moore is somebody who's taken that kind of, like, the backyard Omega energy, and he's done well to kind of translate what makes that kind of style exciting into a more kind of professionalized TV environment. And I do appreciate that, because not all backyarders are cut out for TV.
Mm-hmm. I think we've been pretty fair in our assessment that the Helms and Moore in particular, like, took to TV wrestling very well.
Yeah.
Considering, and you can already tell
that Helms is, like, the unheralded one of mm-hmm. the three. You know, Evan is the one they think they see money in. Shannon is the one they think is, like, your Jeff Hardy high spot merchant. And then, like, I think in their mind, Sugar Shane is just there.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, Lash gets the pin with a roll-up, and then they basically beat up on Lash 3-on-1 until Norman strolls out.
Yeah. Yeah. The 3-on-1 beatdown right after the bell is kind of just like, again, how many matches do we see every week that just end that way? Mm-hmm. It's just like, think of another finish to a match, lads. And then, yeah, it's the fact that, like, Norman comes out and they don't even physically engage. They just all scarper. And again, I know they're comedy job guys, but it's just like, could they do it at least for, like, an actual scary wrestler? Like, the whole point of all four of these guys, like, their characters, is they're cowards. It makes no sense that they're even lesser cowards to me. Like, I'm being really nitpicky there.
Maybe Norman has transformed after going into the coffin and coming out as the faux demon.
Faux demon, the screaming demon?
Hmm.
Perhaps, perhaps. We then again, but the other thing as well is like, I always get surprised. Like, Norman briefly gets on the microphone and kind of like threatens the dudes ahead of the pay-per-view. It always surprises me when I hear Norman speak of that, like, kind of mishmash of a guy who is from England but has lived in North America and Mexico for quite some time. It is all over the shop. We get Tanay and Brain running down the card for the night. Jeff and the various babes the NWO has hired recently arrive. And of course, the continuity of him being a massive sexist that him and Vince Russo were insistent upon staying once he moved. He orders them into the office without him. Brain and Tanay refer to themselves, by the way, as the new Streamline broadcast team then afterwards, which I really like, because that is like the subtle dig of like, we got rid of the shitheads. It's just the pros now.
Or Scott Hudson.
Yeah, I like Scott.
I know. That's what I mean. Taking shots. Obviously not taking shots at Hudson, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's going to get a lot worse. God.
I know. I know. Look. No, I won't even get into it now. There'll be times to get into future members of the...
Listen, when we're reviewing 2025 TNA, we'll get to talk about Mark Madden.
Yeah. Anyway, Jeff and the racists are here. Allegedly. He says people have been asking why he did what he did to Scott Hall. He says because Hall was trying to pass him out and no one's going to take his title shot. He had this kind of like this cow analogy of how he'll be coming out at the Cow Palace with a new heifer in hand, the WCW World Heavyweight title, which got no fucking reaction whatsoever.
Nope.
He calls Sid tonight the white meat babyface. Oh, no, sorry. He said Sid will be with the white meat babyface, the spry Terry Funk, and take on the Harris brothers, of course.
Wow.
Haven't seen Sid wrestle the Harris brothers in, oh, a week.
I knew that was going to be your big takeaway.
Fuck me. Never ends. You know, the worst part is that we're going to, in a couple of months, we're going to have the chronic wrestling the Harris brothers every week.
Yep.
Feud.
And you'll be begging for Sid.
Yeah, yeah. Wolfpack team plays and Hall comes out. He says, we go way back together. We've traveled, we've gone to a bunch of towns, we made a bunch of money. Now you've come down here to the obsession with mentioning the other company. It's like, now you've come down here to this company and you think you're running the show. Jeff says, like, who do you think you're talking to? I'm the commissioner. And he says, you're the acting commissioner till the real deal came back. And Hall, via satellite, reintroduces Nash, who is being rubbed down by ladies.
Mm-hmm.
I love the idea that Nash could not be fucked being here and coming out. He does the Spider-Man. Great power comes great responsibility. Strips Jeff Jarrett of the acting commissioner role and gets straight back in there. Says, like, what are we going to do with you? Are we going to cover you in barbecue sauce and put you in a padded cell with Meng? I did. Now, this is one of the Nash jokes I popped for, where he said, or the other way we could punish you is putting you on a deserted island with Larry Zbysko telling you about when he was on top in the territory.
I popped for that. That was brilliant.
Nash says, we're running back Hall versus Jarrett, and Jeff Jarrett's title shot will be on the line. Hall says, can I talk or will I get in trouble again? Hall says, for old time's sake, let's take a survey, which people loved. And it turns out a lot of people came to see the Outsiders. Shocking.
I was thinking about this, Dave. So we are now almost 4 years, just shy of 4 years into Scott Hall's run in WCW. This is the first time he's been an out and out babyface. Like, there was that, 2 week period at the beginning of the Wolfpack before he turned, inexplicably turned to be a fucking lackey for Hogan. So this is the first, like, Scott Hall babyface run.
Yeah, I would say. Yeah, where it's not like cool heel babyface kind of thing.
And I've talked about this, that this is, I think, the last WCW pay-per-view I remember watching in 2000. I actually had this pay-per-view on VHS. And I remember being really into babyface Scott Hall.
Yeah.
And now maybe it was because I was a kid and I was imagining things, but as I was watching this, I was just thinking, like, you know what? He hasn't been a face, and I can understand why the fans would be getting behind him. Like, you know, he's been the cool heel for 3 years. They want to cheer this guy.
Yeah. Oh, they wanted to cheer him from fucking day one of the heel run. Like, Jimmy, so, it kind of reminds me, like, it's a different thing, but it kind of reminds me of, like, the RVD and the Alliance thing. It's like, look, yeah, we know you're supposed to be heel. We fucking like you.
Yeah, so, like, I get... I mean, they've gone about it arseways, as, you know, WCW do. But I think the end result of Scott Hall being a top-level babyface in this company is what, you know, should have been done a lot sooner. Mm-hmm. Like, he could still go at this point.
Yeah, like, could it be arguably, we talk about those, like, hinge points of, like, stuff they could have done differently and, like, maybe not save the business, but at least, you know, for, like, got a stay of execution.
Mm-hmm.
Arguable. So we get, Jeff having a tantrum backstage, following on from that, just boring. I think that the inevitable march towards Jeff Jarrett at the top of the card is just bumming me out. The moment, I do apologize if that's coming across too well on microphone at the moment. Our next match is Bam Bam Bigelow versus the Demon. Jesus fucking Christ. For the hardcore title, Bam Bam is our new champion. I will say, Bam Bam was not getting paid by the hour tonight, Lee.
I thought this was brilliant.
It was kind of like, we had that Tank Abbott squash the other week.
Yeah.
It kind of ruled. Because, like, the match was shorter than either of the entrances. Demon gets Kane directly in the face and pinned.
No, Demon left his casket, walked about 4 steps.
Yes, that's yes.
And Bam Bam just drilled them and pinned them.
Yeah.
I think it was a pool cue, wasn't it? Or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. It was like literally right as he emerged from the preposterous sarcophagus. And then Nobbs appears out of fat air and attacks, but he gets fended off, and then Bam Bam leaves triumphant. Fucking, like, fucking Nobbs, man.
Good for Bam Bam.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, okay, now you're giving Bam Bam squash wins on TV, like, after I was begging you to do something with him for like a year. Anyway, yeah. You have him as the joke division champion, but okay, whatever. Sid and Funk are with Gene. Sid says, I'm actually delighted to be able to team with Terry Funk, as would fucking I, to be fair. Funk says, Flair better watch his back tonight. We get Jay Biggs, who is, like, basically in traction walking backstage with Harley 2000. Big T, this is so fucking good. Like, this shows how fucking, like it is a bit, but it also kind of, like, it shows how fucking half-arsed Harley 2000 is. Where, like, they're doing this, he's in traction, Stevie Ray is fuming, and Big T just goes, yeah, I'm off to craft services.
No, it's like they enter and they're talking about Booker. Apparently Booker got arrested.
He is now
just Booker, by the way, just in case you forgot.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, yeah, we did cover that. He's lost T.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Big T is just like, well, he's not here and I'm not wrestling, so I'm going to get some wings.
Yeah. Just not fucked.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
And Stevie has a match and he's just like, as he's walking to the ring, and Biggs is like, you know, you don't have to worry about this. And Steve just goes, I'm not even taking off my jacket.
This whole angle is one of the early ones in WCW that at the tender age of about 10, I remember going, this is bad.
Yes.
Like, this is, you know, at an age where I really shouldn't be considering the writing on a TV show. I'm like, this is very badly written.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Crowbar singing, I Want to Rock and Roll All Night backstage, because, like, we've got a glaze kiss because we're so afraid they're going to sue us for what we've done with the Demon. Tanay confirms Booker versus Big T will be for the rights to Harlem Heat. Then we get Stevie and Biggs coming out, and that's what we find out, is that Biggs is in traction because Booker attacked him, and that's why he is in jail. What I really find funny is that, so they say immediately, by the way, that Booker has posted bail, but they show a replay of this attack and basically this hack consisted of an atomic, one atomic drop, which apparently broke every single bone in Jay Biggs's body.
I mean, Jay Biggs is a very slight man, so I believe it.
I do love that. I do gotta love that. It's like he took one move, and you can look at it, you can read it one of two ways. You can either go like he's being a heel manager and hamming up the injury to get Booker in more trouble, or you can go, he's such a fucking wuss that an atomic drop and like a gentle knee to the arse shattered this man's entire skeleton.
David, I know you of all people have fallen on your arse many a time.
I have indeed. And three broken legs, sir.
And how painful that can be.
Yes. Yes, I haven't fallen victim to the dreaded atomic drop, so I can't tell you how many bones that would have broken in me. But yes, a great amount of empathy, obviously, for Jay Biggs here. Booker comes out to what sounds like fucking Disney music in a suit that's in tatters. Like I don't know, I don't know what happened. Did he get like attacked by a fucking pack of wolves after he got out of jail before he got here? He says, "We're not fighting there. Now we're settling that down the road," and goes to confront Biggs. This is a really stupid babyface moment for me, Lee. Like, it didn't make sense. It's like, okay, so you're going to come out and you're going to beat up Biggs again. That's fine. But you're going to expect to just walk clean past Stevie Ray and he'll just stand there and let it happen?
I think we're supposed to believe that Booker still doesn't want to fight his brother.
Yeah.
It's like a really shitty Undertaker Kane. Like,
yeah, worst. But like the logic of like, how not intelligent does he have to be to not think Stevie's going to attack him?
Well, it also works out for him because Booker T just comes out, kicks ass, and leaves.
Yeah, he does, yeah, to be fair. Yeah, absolutely beans Stevie with a chair during that beating as well. Gene says there's a huge announcement coming. And you talk about, like, people give out about Tony Khan saying there's a huge announcement and then it being a real fucking shite. Yeah, Gene, he definitely went, he watched his Gene Okerlund tapes because, like, Gene, the amount of times Gene has had a huge announcement, and like half the time it's something to do with the fucking hotline.
Oh, last week, the hotline, yeah.
Yeah. Late night with Nash calling back in. They do like
the fucking split screen with the two of them on the phone.
That's it. They do a two shot with the two of them on the phone to each other. I did chuckle a little bit at him looking at the budget for WCW and saying that Jeff Jarrett spent $57,000 on guitars last week.
Yes.
Which I don't know if that implies like every single person he meets get an El Cabonc and he's just used that much balsa wood, or it implies that he's buying really expensive guitars to bludgeon people with. Either way, it works for me.
And somehow it wasn't the best part of the call, because then Nash then says to Hall, "What's the deal with knobs and package?"
Yeah.
Like Scott Hall is going to break down every story going on in this company.
Yeah. Because he goes, "Catch me up. I was coming out of anesthesia." And he goes, "Is Hogan back?" And this is my favorite call line in ages. He goes, "Is Hogan back?" And he goes, "Yeah, man. Back big as a house with five bedrooms."
Oh, fucking hell.
Okay, where are we here? Yes, I love how they do the Super Brawl ad, and it's really funny because it's the original Super Brawl ad they did, and it's so outdated because it's all about how the Outsiders and Jeff are all pals, and Brett is in the NWO. Brilliant. Gene's big announcement is that Hogan isn't here tonight, but it'll be on Nitro. Brilliant. Then we get an unhinged Flair promo. I didn't write anything down. Do you have any thoughts on this Flair promo? He just fucking rambled.
Flair is real bad at this time. Like, just if we didn't have to watch it, it's total skip material at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. He's really checked out. Like, as have a lot of people at this point. Next up, we get Crowbar with Daphne versus Billy Kidman with Tori Wilson. Decent little match this again. Like, I think this was a night where, like, everything that, like, there was a couple of matches that were pretty damn decent, and every bit of noise around it was shite.
Mm-hmm. So, Crowbar's new deal is that he is obsessed with the Demon because he is such a huge Kiss fan.
Yeah. Well, aren't we all?
And Kidman's current deal is that he's banging Tori Wilson.
Pretty good deal.
I mean, look, listen, it's a good gimmick. but like Kidman just seems to get slotted in against random people on these shows now. It's very much he's become the
X-Pac.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we have somebody that needs to get a bit more TV ready, needs to get a bit more comfortable. Billy Kidman guarantees a solid match.
Yeah.
And look, Crowbar is getting more comfortable on TV. Like, mm-hmm. we know he's not new to wrestling. Like, he's been around. But again, it's a big jump still. You know, he's relatively new. We need to remember that. The slingshot leg drop looked like it fucking sucked for Kidman to take. Absolutely smashed his face in. Tori gets up to distract. Kidman takes Crowbar's crowbar, hits him with a Frankensteiner and catches him for the win. Our next match. I know you've been waiting. You've been waiting a whole week, Lee, to see Sid Vicious take on the Harris brothers again. Not only that, but to see Jeff Jarrett on commentary, you mm-hmm. must have been like a pig in shit, Lee.
Oh, listen. I've had many highlights in my life. And having to sit through week 19 of Sid versus a Harris bro or Harris bros.
Yeah.
Is, yeah, my, it's right up there for me.
Take us through this match.
There was a Sid choke slam.
Yeah.
There was a Sid Cobra Crush slam. There was a Sid powerbomb. Terry Funk hit a pile driver. Terry Funk went through a table. Jeff Jarrett hit Terry Funk with a guitar and he bumped through a table. And then one of the Harris pinned Terry Funk for the win, as Mike Tenay somehow identified it as the illegal Harris.
How? The bit that I, like, apart from that, the bit I took objection to was, like, when one of the Harris brothers does a low blow behind the ref as if there are fucking DQs in this company.
Yes. They really should have, at this point, just said, you know what, there is no DQs because our refs are so incompetent in this company. They should have just went full ECW with it.
Yeah. What? It was a fucking mess. And that's what I wrote. It's just funny that we had the same note that I wrote. Tanay has the gall to confidently state that was the illegal Harris.
There's no way he could tell.
No, there's no way anybody can tell. There's no way the Harrises can tell. Because usually they're wearing hoods at the meetings they go to. But yeah, anyway, moving on. Flair has another promo clearly before Lex had actually arrived at the building and they needed to.
Why did they do this?
It's Flair.
I wrote my notes. I was like, oh, well, obviously Package isn't here tonight. Package is on the show.
It's definitely they were doing all the promos at like what the call time was and fucking Lex missed the call time. That has to be what it is, because for those of you at home for not watching these Thunders, it's Flair shouting through an open door for like 30 to 40 seconds.
We got a deal, Package. We got a deal. You got a deal.
Yeah, yeah. The cliff notes of this is Flair fancies Liz and he's mad about Hogan.
Yes.
Then Lex is out. So he is there, which is like, yeah, the moment of being purely baffled. He confirms that he has made the deal with Flair to take out their opponents, mainly Hogan. Next match is Fit Finlay versus Total Package. Oh, fuck all happens.
I have to say, remember we talked about how Terry Funk and Ric Flair is a legends match?
Yeah.
Fucking Hulk Hogan and Package is a featured attraction match now.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, look, they were fucking turning them away at the door when they heard this was on.
It's just gone fucking full Gabe Sapolsky where every match needs a name.
Mm-hmm. So Liz hits Finlay in the bad leg with the bat for the DQ. They pilmanize his hand. I will say, thank God they swapped out the bat with her for the rubber bat, because some of these bat shots, man... Like, Liz even was, with the fake bat.
Liz was wild, man.
Then Nobbs comes out, because we didn't have enough of that on the show, and slams his arm on the apron for the laugh.
Yes. We're still doing the Nobbs and Finlay fucking feud.
Yeah, of course we are. It'll never fucking end. We get a Saturday night tease where apparently no wrestlers will be on the show because they didn't fucking mention any, but Saturday night is coming on Saturday night, so you can tune in for that. Then we get Gene with... Idol and Lane. Any thoughts on this? fucking my eyes glazed over during this.
I don't know if you noticed, Dave, but Idol is Lodi backwards.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Did we miss out on the possible era-defining tag team of Idol and Relic?
I mean, listen. They would have been a great collection of killers.
You'd surely call them Red Rum then. Like to have another backwards, surely.
I did.
And it would be Relic being like, you know, giving big murderous energy, and then like Idol actually drinking a glass of rum, not knowing that it's palindrome.
I did enjoy Gene running down. I won't say running through, running down their gimmick history.
Yeah.
And the lads just blowing it off, going, we're not gimmicks, we're wrestlers.
Yeah.
Ah, sorry, boys, you're gimmicks.
Fucking terrible matchup next. That's just like, again, it's one of those fucking three bad angles masquerading as a match.
Hang on. We did get some advancement in this match. It doesn't involve anyone in the match, but there was gimmick advancement in the match.
Yes. Is this Miss Hancock?
Yes, because this is the first time we see Miss Hancock take her hair down.
Yes. She lets her hair down, passes Brain a piece of paper, and leaves. We don't ever get the...
No, they never tell us.
No, they never tell us what's on the piece of paper. Vito then makes short work of Idol for the win. Crowbar and Daphne were prowling in the aisle, attack Disco, and rob the belts. Because, you know, it's been a few months since our last someone has robbed a belt they haven't won yet angle. That's one of my pet hates in wrestling, like.
What I don't understand is they have so many people on this roster, yet Crowbar is now in two feuds.
Yeah. Look, to be fair, there are a lot worse wrestlers they could have in two feuds.
Yes, but that means David Flair is still in two feuds as well.
Fair. Jesus. Just the magnitude of that has just hit me. And we have not reached peak David Flair all over these shows yet.
No, not even close.
Okay, so then we get, speaking of character advancement, we're talking to the cat. James Brown was supposed to appear on Nitro, and he didn't. Cat says he was there, he was shooting a video. Gene doesn't believe it. Cat says he's going to be there Monday. Gene's, now, this is my favorite moment in months, because so Gene makes people laugh very often,
mm-hmm.
or nearly makes people laugh, but Gene usually holds it together himself. Gene says to Kat, it's a good thing you don't sell used cars. And without missing a beat, he says, I'll sell my foot to your ass. And Gene fully fucking corpses.
He broke.
Oh my god, he was gone.
the two of them did.
Yeah. It was great. Great little moment there. Genuine comedy. One of the rare times where somebody in WCW has said something funny that is designed to make somebody laugh, and it succeeds. Mysterious Arms, watch Rick. More on this later.
Mysterious Arms.
Mysterious Arms appear, even though it's weird because, like, immediately I knew whose arms they were. Immediately I knew.
Is that them weird arm websites that you'd be checking out?
Yeah, absolutely. Flair is out with the WCW magazine and Gene Okerlund in tow, who's just recovered.
Oh my god, this fucking promo.
Go for it.
I don't want to go for it. It's fucking horrendous.
This was shite. It started shite and got worse.
Yeah, so Gene calls out Flair. Flair is pissed at... First of all, he's pissed at ESPN for not naming him in some like Athlete of the Century list. Then he whips out the WCW magazine and they ranked Hogan number one all time and then Flair number two. And Flair just rants for like 90 seconds.
Do you think he was like, he asked for the time because he was legit mad about it?
Yes. And I'm sure Bret Hart asked for you know, 3 minutes on the next Nitro as well.
Yeah.
Because all these...
They all gave their PowerPoints.
Oh, God. Like, why is this on the air?
It just makes Flair seem so small.
You're a fucking 14-time world champion.
Yeah. Heath Flair is not bothered about this.
Yeah, you don't need to tell us that, you know, you're upset that Hogan is ranked above you.
Yeah, yeah. So this leads to an interruption. After, I will say the one bit I enjoyed, he elbow drops the magazine. I will always enjoy Ric Flair assaulting inanimate objects. Just like dropping an elbow on his clothes or on the magazine in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Dustin Rhodes, the owner of said arms, comes out to fucking no reaction at all.
Why would he get a reaction?
Yeah. Because he's not a spooky pedophile anymore. And that was the real money gimmick. He says what Flair let happen to the Gormless One made him sick because he abandoned his son. And he obviously referenced his own father. He says David is more man than him and he's fixing to kick Rick's ass. I also love the classic, one of my favorite tropes in WCW is there is always, at a building Flair is going to be performing in, there will be one person with a sign that spells Ric Flair the wrong way.
Yeah, oh, always. Always has to be spelled incorrectly.
Sure as night follows day. Yes, this leads to, would you call it a match?
No, it's like 20 seconds of fucking brawling and we get a ref bump.
Yeah. Just fucking.
It's like
there are various times in the history of this company where if you told me we were getting to see Flair versus Dustin tonight, I'd be like, hell yeah, brother.
1993, Flair versus Dustin. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah,
year 2000, Ric Flair, Dustin Rhodes for 50 seconds, where Ric Flair pins Dustin after hitting him with his Rolex.
Yeah, loaded fist with the Rolex in. Yeah. Then Funk comes out to attack Flair. Then Lex comes out to attack both of them. Puts Flair in the torture rack. Fuck off. Then we get a completely superfluous segment of Kevin Nash ordering dinner from his desk. And that leads us to our main event of the evening. As Jeff Jarrett takes on Scott Hall for the number one contendership. This was bad.
I mean, it was bad because the Harris Bros were involved.
Yeah.
A lot. I am in no way saying it was good. I thought Scott
Hall. Shouldn't.
I thought Scott Hall was good.
Yeah.
I thought he was particularly dialed in by Scott Hall standards.
Yeah, look, yeah, a rare on and tuned in night for him.
I did like, you know, like stuff like this matters. Hall didn't have any NWO logos. It was, you know, the outsider gear.
Yeah.
Stuff like that matters. Like, you can say it doesn't, but it does. But yeah, just a total nothing match. There's like a really awkward bad ref bump. And Hall gets like hits out of their edge, gets like the visual 10 count pin.
You've ref on ref violence.
You've ref on ref violence, yeah, because Mark Johnson comes in after Jerry hits a stroke.
Yeah.
Johnson makes the count, but Mickey J is up and, you know, says the match has to continue.
Yeah.
Hall ducks a US title shot and he uses the belt. Slick pulls out Mickey J and the match just gets thrown out. Sid comes out and we get an outside his edge to Slick and powerbomb to Jarrett, and that's the end of the show, basically.
Yeah. Just ends on a kind of like I said, it had been a decent wrestling show. And that even the matches that were bad on paper were like, even like, you know, we had the Bam Bam match, which is like a few seconds. We had the Flair Dustin match was like a minute. You couldn't complain about it at this point, but this took a while and was shite.
Yeah, and I get it. But look, this is a rare WCW show that ends with the baby faces standing tall.
Yeah, yeah. We'd savor the little things while they're
I mean, you have to. Like, little things like Scott Hall being dialed in. That's, you know, that's what's getting me through these things.
Yeah. Oh. Anyway, Lee, give us your overall thoughts on the show and your winners and losers. Let me get out of here.
I don't think it was an awful thunder by standards of this era.
Yeah.
I could do without Kevin Nash, commissioner, in his office, but I know that this isn't going to last very long. I'm into Scott Hall. I'm into Sid. Kidman is solid in the mid card. There's stuff there I like. A lot of stuff I dislike: Hogan, Flair, Luger. It's just, you know,
end of list.
Yeah, I know. Look, there's many things I dislike.
Yeah,
Finley, Knobs. Do you want me to list them all?
No, we don't have that kind of time.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we want this to be a nice tight hour and a half, not 3 hours. So with that in mind, I will give you your finish counter, brought to you by Ludwig Borger. Gives us 8 matches on this show with 3 clean finishes, 1 disqualification, 2 interference leading directly to a finish, and 2 others. Our non-finishes here are 1 via Rolex and 1 via no contest. This has been another episode of Days of Thunder. Thank you all very much. We'll be back behind the paywall next week. Things are like a little bit more kind of like on an even keel, fatherhood wise. So we're slowly getting back into the rhythm.
We will get there. We will.
Please bear with the minimal service interruptions in the meantime. We appreciate you all very much. And yes, we'll be back with our fucking 100th main timeline Thunder episode next week. I'm gonna take the pin out of this particular grenade. We're not doing that in special for, we're going to review an episode of Thunder.
Who knows what the Observer will have in store for us.
They're gonna have a clip show, they're gonna bring back previous guests, this is, you know, Arquette's gonna be on. No, we're not doing any of that shit. Gonna be us miserably going through what I'm sure will be a not,
it's also the go home show for Super Bowl, so it has to be good, right?
Anyway, yeah, we'll see you next week.
We live in hope.
Hope springs eternal at Days of Thunder. We will see you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
Hey kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network.